Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello again and welcome to another episode of My Big Break, the podcast series from Motorsport that looks at the big moments that key figures in racing face in their careers and how things could have turned out very differently. I'm your host Chris Medland and this week our guest is Pierre Gasly, who reflects on the help he received to do karting on a serious level, opening doors in French motorsport. Pierre also looks back at the pressure that comes with being a Red Bull junior and how he delivered to get to F1, as well as the ill-fated spell that saw him demoted back to Toro Rosso in 2019. Pierre, thank you so much for joining us on the My Big Break podcast, looking at the moments in your career that turned out to have a big influence or could have had a big influence. Now, are you one of those people who think you were destined to become a racing driver? Because it seems like you couldn't escape karting as a kid.
I will say so. I always believed that I will become one day a Formula One driver. Obviously, when you start, it's only a dream and everything seems so far away from where you are. You know, I still remember these days watching Formula One, for example, with Charles in Monaco, and watching Michael Schumacher and Alonso and Lewis, and we're both like very young kids and looking at each other, wondering, okay, there might be one of us there one day, or maybe none of us, who knows, but we both really wanted to get there. And then, you know, slowly year after year you grow up, you do your wins, poles, championships, and then as you grow up and get closer to the top, then things starts to become more real. But I would say as a kid it was mainly a dream. I always believed in my dreams, that if I do the right things, potentially one day things could happen. And as I grew up, then I had this belief which grew deeply and became more a reality, that I knew it was up to me to make it happen.
But you had quite a sporting or motorsporting family, didn't you? That probably meant there was no chance of you not at some point driving
a
go-kart.
Well, I did try to... It's not like I tried, but I started with ice hockey when I was a kid, when I was 3 years old. And this was an experience. I broke myself a couple of times. But it was nice. Then I switched to football. So I played football from the age of 5 till I was 11, and I think this was one of the best thing I did as a team, because it was really, you know, it's really a team sport. So you got to learn how to, play with your teammates, how to get the best out of yourself, but within a team, not so much focused on your own performance. You got to figure this out, and physically it was good. You know, I was like a winger, so I kept running the entire time, all the games. And I think physically already from a young age, I built up quite a good foundation. And then I started karting at 6. And from my first test, I still remember it like it was yesterday. I remember I did only 3 laps, but it was too much fun. I had so much fun during the 3 laps. As soon as I finished, I told my parents, I was like, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. And they were like, oh gosh, no. I have 4 brothers that said the same thing before me, and they were like, oh no, not the last one.
Well, because it's an expensive sport as well, isn't it?
It's way too expensive. And they were like, you know, Pierre, we can buy you as many boots as you want to play football, but please don't race. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, that's what I love. And, you know, it took me 3 years to convince them that's really what I wanted. And I think they also bought some time for them to find solutions, to find, you know, sponsors and money to before we got going for real.
Well, how did they manage that then, I guess? Who were the people that became sponsors or helpers that helped you get into proper karting? Because I guess, you know, you can do an arrive and drive if you wanted to, but if you want to be serious, you've got to be in a championship and with a team.
Exactly. I mean, before I started, I got very lucky to, you know, have the family that I have. I have 4 brothers, and 3 of them raced in karting before. So my dad raced in rally. My my granddad was a massive motorsport fan, and even my grandmother was a champion. You know, she won karting championships. So they knew the difficulties of the sport. They knew the challenges, especially financially. And you know, that's why they gave themselves 3 years, because they were looking for sponsors, and they knew how it works. They knew the money that we needed, like the minimum money we needed to get the competitions started. And and then, yeah, I would say without my family, for sure, 100%, I would have never been able to do this sport. And then after growing up, I mean, every year was a pretty big challenge for me, because I knew that I was never sure whether we were gonna be able to carry on for the next season. So I knew I had to basically win as many races as I could to prove the people, okay, I'm special, and you know, please help us continuing this journey. And that's why I had this drive and this motivation. Obviously, I'm so competitive. When I get on the track, I'm like, I want to beat every single one of you. Like, there is no, I want to be the best. Doesn't matter what it takes. I just want to be number one. But on top of that, I had no other choice, because if I wanted to continue that sport, I had to show that I was different than others. And then we met the owner of Sody Karts, who is the biggest karting manufacturer in France and also worldwide for rental go-kart. But competition, they are the biggest in France. And we had when I was 12, I think, 11, 12. And yeah, the owner, really, we had a very good, we bonded really quickly. And then he had a big trust in me, and then said, okay, I really want to support Pierre in his career. And I want him in my team. And then he gave us deals which were 5 or 6 times cheaper than, you know, the drivers I was competing against. And, you know, I remember Carlos was in Tony Kart, which was like the really fancy team, Italian, super fast. And there was no chance I could be there. It was so expensive. And then I went with Sody, which was so much cheaper, but they had the same drive, and you know, we worked so well together, and in the end we achieved amazing results together. But without that guy, the deals that he offered to me and my family, same, I would have not been able to compete at that level. So
do you remember his name? It sounds like he needs a shout out.
Yeah, Gilda Merian.
Okay,
so yeah, big thanks to Gilda. Big shout out to Gilda. And you know, it's also this year's I moved to international level, European, finished 2nd at the European Championship, 3rd at the World Cup, won the French Championship, and good years. You know, we raced against Esteban, with Charles. I was teammate with Charles, actually, when won the French Championship. And I mean, it's so funny that we raced with all these guys that now we find each other in Formula One, competing at the highest level in motorsports, when I still remember us being 11, 12, 13 years old, you know, fighting for karting championships. But at the same time, it felt so far away from F1, even though we all had the same dreams. We knew that if there would be one of us making it to the top, that would be already extraordinary. But in the end, yeah, most of us made it to Formula One today, and now we're all fighting like same time as when we were back in karting, but now it's much more powerful and expensive cars.
I was going to say, they are a lot more expensive. And it's one of the things we like doing this series, because it does get drivers to look back. I mean, we're sat here with a beautiful view over the Barcelona beach in the W Hotel. They've given us a nice little space.
I didn't have this at 13 as well.
I was going to say, I mean, you grew up in a lovely part of the world, but I imagine you weren't staying in 5-star hotels and flying like
no
this.
No chance. I had, you know, that's also what I appreciate, why I appreciate all that. I remember, you know, I told you like 2-3 years before my parents, you know, found the fundings to start my karting career. And we used to go like, you guys have no idea. Obviously now we're living in 5-star hotel. It's all fancy, and we have the most luxurious life. But to appreciate it, I'm feeling so grateful today, because I've experienced also, I'm not going to say the worst, because obviously they are always worse than what you have. But the cheapest hotel, you know, with my family, we used to say, okay, you know, we have 6 races this year. We've got that much budget. We've got, I don't know, 500 euros and we've got like basically 25 nights at the hotel. So if you make the ratio, we're spending like 20 years a night in the hotel, like back in the days, during my karting days. And, you know, I've seen places they were horrendous. And when I remember, that's also what makes you enjoy like all this luxurious lifestyle that we get in Formula One, because, you know, sometimes I compare what it was like not even that long time ago, like 10, 15 years ago, and things have evolved so fast. And yeah, I do believe it makes you appreciate all that way more when you've seen, you know, very extreme quality of life. But then that's why I want to work even harder every single day, because, you know, this is, you know, you kind of enjoy it so much, you know, you just want to keep it going. But it's just very motivating.
Yeah, it's not a bad lifestyle to live. And like you say, you don't certainly don't want to lose it. But you can see as well where you got the drive to get here. You also had the support from the FFSA Academy, which I always say wrong, but the French Federation.
You get it, right?
In 2011, and had a strong year with them. But then you stepped up to Formula Renault 2 litre. And I get the feeling that 2013 and winning the championship must have been a big year for you.
It was a big, the biggest jump in my career. That's when everything got a lot more serious. So that year was a bit make or break. Like, I don't know if that's how you say it in English, yeah. Where I had to win the championship to make it to the next level. There was a half a million prize money to make it to the next category. We're talking huge numbers. And at that time, we knew this was the last category which we could afford with my sponsors. And they could not continue to the next stage in Formula Renault 3.5. And the pressure was so intense that year. I think even compared to Formula One, I think up to now, it's still the highest pressured moment I've ever had in my career. Where I had to win the championship. It was half a million for the first one, and it was zero for the second one. And that's how it works in life. You always remember the winner. The winner gets all the rewards. Finish second, third, tenth, nobody cares and doesn't matter. And I fought against Ollie Roland, amazing driver. I've learned so much, like fighting with him during that year. Esteban was there as well, De Vries. So we had a great year. And it was the championship got decided in the last race in Barcelona, actually. That's why I always get really excited coming back here. And I won the championship, which gave me that big prize money to make the next step to the next category. And then I signed my Red Bull deal a month later, going to Abu Dhabi, meeting Helmut Marko, telling me that I had not won enough races, I had not done enough pole position, and I should have won the championship by 100 points. But still, he was happy to give me a contract to start working together. And and that's when I knew, okay, now it's up to me. You know, I've got a Formula One world champion team that is backing me up and giving me the opportunity if I do the things right. So now it's a matter of focusing on myself and you know, delivering the best performance of myself if I want to make it to Formula One.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you think then, if you hadn't won that championship, that Red Bull wouldn't have signed you, that you had to be a champion to get that deal? Or were there other teams around?
I want to believe so. And, you know, it was so important to me also personally. It was, you know, when I set a target to myself, it's, I just can't accept not achieving the performance that I expect from myself. You know, I always set very high standards, and that's how I motivate and always push myself beyond my limits. And there was no other options than winning that championship, which wasn't easy because, you know, Oli did crash into me a couple of times, did try really hard for me not to get it. He actually did crash into me in the last race, was leading and first lap, turn 10, dive bombed me and sent me spinning. So it was intense. It was very intense racing. But then I always respected him because, you know, he came to see me at the end of the race and told me for $500,000 I had to try it. And I appreciated that because I was like, you know, we're basically deciding our career.
Mm.
And if you are driven, you're ready to do anything to... you know, to get what you want more than anything. And it was slightly dirty, but it's been always like that with him. And that's also how we, I think, took our racing skills to another level together. So, it was very intense. I don't know what would have happened with Red Bull, but at the end of the day, you know, it's, that's how it works. If you want to be the best, you got to be a winner. And people remember winners. They don't remember, you know, outsiders. And that's just how it works in this life.
Mm. And you mentioned Helmut there and the pressure he put on you straight away, telling you what you should have done that year. And it's clear that he's someone who keeps the pressure on his drivers. So you said that year in 2013 was the one that was the biggest pressure you felt having to deliver. Was 2016 in GP2 with Prema a close second? Surely that was a year, again, that you had to win if you were going to make it to F1.
Yeah. It was... Obviously, it was... intense, but somehow it was different. I always, during that year, felt like all the cards were there for me to win the championship. And we got slightly unlucky at times, and there were a couple of events where things didn't fall down the our way. But somehow it felt like things were always under control and we could see where we were heading. And always had that sort of margin to be to keep things under control, where 13 was so tight and things were not that clear during that season. So for sure it was, you know, GP2, Formula 2 is right before Formula 1, and I always compare with football. For example, when you're in the second league, if you win the second league, then you're moving straight up to Formula to the first league. Obviously F1, F2 works slightly different. For different reasons, but obviously the pressure was intense because I knew to make it there, and there was, for sure, I had no other options. But I did feel during that year that I had all the cards in hands to win the championship.
And then I know, yeah, we're in Barcelona and we've got an F1 race for you to get to. So yeah, I know you're quite short for time, but I do want to focus on two final big points that we can't ignore. And one is, when you got the promotion to Red Bull, you know, you'd come into Formula One, you'd impress so much. When you got that promotion, did it feel like everything was going to plan? Did it feel like every step you'd needed to take, you'd taken, and you were just on this trajectory that was going to lead you to winning races and championships?
Well, I mean, for sure, you know, when you get promoted after a year in Formula One to the best team, or one of the best team in Formula One over the last 10 years, you know, there's a reason for that. So everything was... falling into place really, really nicely, coming from winning the Formula 2 championship, finishing runner-up in Super Formula in my first season, great first season in Formula 1 with Toro Rosso. So, everything was going extremely well, and there was no reason for things not to work out. So, obviously, at that time was, you know, everything... only positive things from all these years.
And then, based on that, how did you reflect, or how do you reflect now on being demoted after just 12 races? Is it something that is a turning point in your career still? Has it changed you, maybe?
Oh, big time. You know, big time. Obviously, you know, you always learn way more from failures and challenges than any other things, or even from success, because you always need to question what went wrong, what could have been better, how could you have done things better, how could you have managed things better. There were things in my control, and there were other things out of my control. And you know, being the way that I am, I'm also a control freak. I need to understand. I need transparency. I need to be aware of what's happening. And we know all drivers are all different, and we need certain environments and working conditions to be at your best. And I don't want to come back too much into details into what's happened, because I've always said it. Certain things have to be confidential, and you know, we've talked so much with Almut and Christian and Red Bull over these things, and I think we all know quite clearly what's happened. We accept or not, this is another question, but I think it's quite clear, and we're both fine with it. Cool, things have been way better, yeah, for sure. But then now there is no real point to talk about it. And it feels like, honestly, to me, like it was such a long time ago, like 2019 or 2022. Since then, I've you know, won in Monza, finished Brazil on the podium with Toro Rosso, last year another podium with AlphaTauri. So I do feel there is a lot of positive that came out from that situation. And, you know, the drive it gave me, the motivation, the work that I've put in since that time, have been you know, incredible, and I'm also really happy with what I've managed to achieve after that, because a lot of people thought I was done, and you know, that's not the way that it works with me. You know, I've been always fighting for everything that I wanted in my life, and when you try to put obstacles in front of me, I'm not the kind of one to go back and just stand there and accept things as they are. You know, I'm someone that fights for everything that I want, and I'm objective. You know, no one is perfect. You always need to look at yourself in the mirror and with an objective view and understanding how you can make yourself better. And that's what I do every single day. That's my motivation. The peer that I am today is better than the peer I was three years ago, but it's worse than the peer I will be in 3 years. And that's just the fact, and that's why I work. I work so hard, and I know my time will come as well, and I'll get my opportunity. And once I get that opportunity, I know 100% that I will make it work. So that's all that matters. I keep, you know, grinding, I keep working, and I'm just excited for that time to come.
Well, like you said, let's finish on a positive then. You mentioned Monza, and was it looking for your big break? Was that red flag in that race your big break? Major Grand Prix winner, or partly?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It clearly did help. I must say, still, the 25 laps that followed were very long. They were very long, but they're probably the, you know, my best 25 laps in Formula One. I just felt so good out there with no one ahead of me. Did remind me of my times in Super Formula and GP2 in you know, Formula Renault. Like, when you're just leading and you're just in your zone, nothing matters. You're not chasing anyone. You're just focusing corner after corner, lap after lap, putting the best laps you can. And, you know, I had pretty fast boys chasing me right behind me with Carlos, and the McLaren was fast. Valtteri was trying to, you know, catch us also with the Mercedes. I thought that Valtteri would have been the main threat at the time. So, you know, there was quite a lot of things going on. But at the end of the day, I knew this was my day, and I was like, there is no way I'm gonna let this opportunity go. You know, it's I'm with the AlphaTauri, I'm in Monza, I'm leading that race. Doesn't matter what it takes, I'm just gonna find my way to win it. And yeah, the emotion I got were incredible, and yeah, you just become addicted once you feel it. Once, the only thing that I care about now is just to repeat this as many times as I can.
Yeah, I mean, you can sit here and call yourself a Grand Prix winner. That must feel pretty special.
Yeah, it does. It does, but at the same time, I'm not someone that kind of look back so much. Even it's important, you know, I would not say it's a good thing to do. Sometimes it's important to look back and appreciate, but I'm more someone living in the moment, in the present, either looking ahead and, you know, what do I want? What do I want in 1 year, in 3 years, in 5 years, what do I want to achieve? Okay, and then after, based on that, what is the plan that we put in place to achieve these goals? And I want to be world champion, so now we need to get to work.
Well, I better let you get to work, and what we'll do then, from the sounds of that, is we'll get you back on the pod.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But your career is over, and you can then tell us exactly where it happened.
Okay, we've got time then for that. We've seen 10, 15 years.
Easy. Pierre, thank you so much for telling us your story.
No problem. Thank you.